Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Monday morning. It's August 3rd. Yeah, and it feels like a Monday. We'll get to some traffic right after this weather report. 64 degrees under smoky skies here in Old Town Park City. Heber City also under some smoke, but some hazy sunshine, I guess you call it. Hi. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, we have meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Monday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for this Monday for the Wasatch Back. As we take a look at things here, one thing you're going to really notice, those smoky, hazy skies out there. We've got some of that smoke and haze coming in from the wildfires off to our north out of the Pacific Northwest. And, of course, we also have some smoke coming in from our fires here in the state, particularly the Widemouth fire down near the I-70 corridor. Either way, smoky, hazy skies will be out there for us today, but we're going to try to keep those temperatures a little on the cooler side. So high temperatures in Park City only expected to be into the mid-80s today as a weak boundary begins to move into the area. Hey, that's not bad. We'll take that for this time of the year. The Heber Valley, we're expecting those temperatures to not be in the triple digits, but only in the lower 90s as we go throughout today. We're going to keep with those smoky, hazy skies heading into your Tuesday, but very similar temperatures. Highs in the low to mid-80s. 80s for us in Park City with highs into the lower 90s in the Heber Valley. As we move into the middle of the work week, we'll begin to see that smoke and haze push back to our north and west. That's because that ridge of high pressure to our east will begin to push back to the west slowly. So we'll see those highs still in the mid-80s for your Wednesday in Park City with highs in the low 90s in the Heber Valley. But then we start to notice the heat returning as we get towards your Thursday. Look for mostly sunny skies. Temperatures climbing close to 90 again in Park City. We'll see those highs back into the mid-90s in the Heber Valley. By the time we get towards the end of the week, we're back underneath that heat dome. High pressure means lots of sunshine. Highs will be into the lower 90s for us in Park City. We'll see those highs around 100 degrees in the Heber Valley, and I think we're in the lower 100s for your Saturday and Sunday with plenty of sunshine in the Heber Valley. Look for those temperatures to climb into the lower 90s for Saturday and Sunday in Park City. So the heat will return across the area. So let's enjoy this brief little reprieve over the next couple of days. That's the latest on your forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up in just a minute, we'll be checking in with Summit County Sheriff Casey Bates along with spokesperson Skylar Talbot with an update on some law enforcement issues. Later on, Heber City Manager Matt Brower calling in to preview Tuesday's City Council meeting. And finally, Judy Steiger, the director of Chabad Park City, has details on this year's Jewish Festival. It's a celebration of Jewish life and culture. A concern among some eastern Summit County families is the ragged state of their ancestors' burial grounds. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports cemetery districts have the smallest government budgets in the county.
Gary Pace has been the Hoytsville Cemetery sexton since 1973, and he says there are 73 burial plots left.
We do not own the backhoe. I just have to pick out somebody that, and I've... I've used five people over the 50-something years I've been there.
Maintaining Eastern Summit County's pioneer-era burial grounds falls to volunteers on the county's least funded government boards. During July 8th interviews for seats on the Hoytsville Cemetery Maintenance District Board, County Council member Tanya Hansen says she's read social media users lamenting the state of the graveyard. She asked prospective board members if the district has enough money.
So do you believe the condition of the cemetery is okay right now? Yeah, if people would take care of their lots.
That's Gary's wife, Sharon Pace, who maintains Hoytsville's burial records. Those are all on paper, none yet digitized.
Okay, all right. That's our biggest problem. We don't have perpetual care and nobody wants to take care of their own lots, so.
The majority of rural Summit County cemeteries are not perpetual care, leaving upkeep to the families of the deceased. Of the small Eastside Cemetery districts, Hoytsville's annual budget is the smallest. At just $5,000 taxpayer dollars, they get money by selling lots, too. Board members spend it on herbicide and compensating grave diggers. Gail Pace says they've been saving up to buy more land.
We're pretty solvent. We got money that we could purchase ground if we could negotiate and purchase to buy more ground. Because there is lots of burials going to happen with all these subdivisions going in.
The 7-acre cemetery was founded in 1893 just east of Hoytsville Road near Creamery Lane. It abuts 27 acres controlled by Larry H. Miller Real Estate and Ivory Homes. Cemetery board members say they can't afford to buy some of that land at the going market rate as Eastern Summit County grows ever more expensive. Ivory Homes advertises new homes in the Red Hill community north on Hoytsville Road, starting at $550,000. In those parts, the affordable housing debate is often recast in terms of generational housing, making sure children can stay in Summit County if they so choose. Hansen, who lives in Colville, observed that the non-perpetual care model relies on families not moving away.
And to your point about people not taking care of their lots, next to my grandparents' lots is my grandmother's brother and his wife and a daughter. They have no family around here to take care of that lot. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the problem too, right?
Gail Pace's advice to other cemetery caretakers is to, quote, get a thick skin.
Because people go in there and they see the lots that aren't kept up, and they get mad at you and they chew your butt out because you don't take care of it the way they think it should be taken care of.
Volunteers at the Wanship Cemetery, which flooded just before Pioneer Day, report similar complaints. Wanship is also non-perpetual care, constrained by a small tax base and lack of water rights. But the cemetery boards are not pursuing tax increases right now. The county council appointed Gary, Sharon, and Gail Pace to the cemetery board July 8th. They also appointed Wesley Pace and Ken Mitchell. Those five were the only ones who applied. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Joining me now in the studio with an update from the Summit County Sheriff's Office, I have Sheriff Casey Bates, along with Public Information Officer Skylar Talbot. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Leslie.
Sheriff, let's get an update on the investigation from the report of more than $40,000 missing from the Summit County jail bank account. Maybe first explain to us, why does the Sheriff's Office investigate this, since the Sheriff's Office is in charge of the jail? I mean, why don't we have an outside entity looking into this?
Yeah, thanks for bringing this up, Leslie. I think this is important. And I first want to say that when this first happened, that we made sure to report what we saw. The reason why this investigation is happening the way it is right now is because we are using our forensics division to find out what's going on. And if at any time the investigation moves forward and we have a reason to believe that we should conflict it out, we will absolutely do so. I think it's important for the citizens to know and everyone to know, you know, we have talked about this not being taxpayer money, and there's a lot of questions on that about what that means. And I think it's important to talk about it being specifically a welfare account it's an account that holds profits that come from the operations within the jail for the inmates, such as commissary, such as telephone system. It's the things that they use within the jail, and there are some profits that come from that, and it's a welfare account that's held. And that money is therefore then used to benefit those incarcerated. And what I mean by that is the money is used for programming, education, treatment programs. It's used to buy TVs. It's used to buy exercise equipment. It's used to buy the seeds that we talked about last time for the garden. That's what this fund is. And we believe it's very important to identify what is going on and where these funds are going.
Well, and you know, that I think that's an important piece that the sheriff mentioned. These investigations are by far the most complex type of investigations. They take a lot of time. There's a lot of paperwork involved. They don't tend to move quickly at all. And like the sheriff mentioned, you know, if we do, as we get sort of a better understanding of what is going on, If we determine that, hey, you know, we probably should conflict this out, that decision will be made. Right now, the direction that we're going is, again, continuing with the investigation. We're in the process of getting some search warrants back that hopefully will give us a better understanding of what exactly happened. And you know, like I said, if we need to conflict it out, that's certainly something we can do.
Yeah, so you think, though, that it's not a current employee that's involved? I mean, at this point, we don't have anybody who may be identified?
If we had any reason to believe that this was a current employee, past employee, or anything like that, that would be a conflict. And we would absolutely have somebody else take care of this. At this time, we do not believe that that's the case.
So it sounds like, I mean, could the system have been hacked in some sense? I mean, could it be, you know?
Yes, just like any other person's bank account, we use a bank account like everyone else, and this is what we believe is happening, is we are no different than any other person who has a bank account, and somebody has accessed the account, and the stop payments, everything that was put in place, they got through. And, you know, we were going to, as we move forward, talking about scams and frauds, and we have done that several times on the radio. It's very important that you report this as we've reported it. They're very difficult, just like Skylar mentioned. They're very hard, and they last a long time, but we're really hoping to identify whomever it is. So,
well, you know, it's interesting because, like you mentioned, we talk about this, gosh, probably every time we're on the show, you know, yeah. Frauds and scams being a huge issue. And here's a great example. The sheriff's office certainly is not immune to this either. So,
right.
You know, we'll put another plug in for those frauds and scams. Be vigilant. You know, like the sheriff says, report those when you see those inconsistencies in your banking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So do we know... It sounded like money was going towards a telecommunications company. I mean, somebody was paying for the cell phone or buying phones and perhaps reselling them, or?
Well, that's what we're working on finding out right now. Like I said, you know, part of the investigation is to, you know, serve these search warrants on these companies that we know money was going to. And through that process, we'll be able to identify exactly what services were being paid for. And hopefully we will be able to identify who, you know, set those payments up. So again, it tends to be a slow process. The investigations don't move very quickly, but hopefully we will have some more on this, and we can give everyone a much clearer picture on what happened.
Okay. We do know that the payment stopped a year ago. So, I mean, why a year later that we're kind of learning about this?
You know, as far as the exact timeline, I'm unaware of what the exact timeline looks like. But, you know, I think it's important to mention that our process now is we are in the middle of this investigation. And, you know, it's going to be a tiered approach. So as we complete this criminal investigation, if, you know, things come up that we identify that, you know, we can fix internal processes or something internally was missed or should have been caught sooner, those will be addressed. And you know, the public can be assured that, yes, we will, you know, work to identify any internal processes that we can change. But right now we're focused on the criminal investigation, and that'll be how we move forward.
Okay. What can you tell us? I know that this is not a county investigation. It was the stabbing death. Austin Garceau has been charged with that. This is being handled, I'm guessing, by Park City Police, since it happened within the city boundaries.
Yeah, this investigation, just like you said, is being handled by the Park City Police. The Sheriff's Department isn't involved in the investigation, but I think Skylar has an update on the attorney side.
Correct. Yeah. So as far as the Summit County Attorney's Office, as you know, the one singular charge of homicide has been filed. I believe the next hearing date is scheduled for August 19th, and that is going to be a detention hearing.
Okay. Let's see. It's summer, so we see a lot of calls for SAR. How is this summer kind of?
SAR has been busy this summer. As we know, we want people to be aware of, like everyone knows, the extreme heat that we're all experiencing. And SAR, as of July, I didn't have the end of July, but they've had 32 incidents so far. And I think now there have been quite a few more that I have seen SAR go out on just in the month of July, mostly medical, mostly people going up, getting elevation sickness, heat, those things. So please be aware of where you're going. Of course, let people know where you are, but make sure you're prepared to go out.
All right. Let's see. You've got a behavioral health unit that is moving forward. Tell us about this. This is something that's actually for the jail.
Yeah, I'm really excited for
it. Look how big that smile is. My goodness.
I am really excited for this behavioral health unit. This has been something that we have been trying to get for a few years, and Senator Kennedy does a Burn JAG grant, and the deputy county manager, Jana Young, reaches out to us every year, asks us about projects that we want to do, and this has been one that we have put in for. And we were granted $2.75 million for a behavioral health unit to go and have a wing extended beyond like our corrections facility. So we have been waiting for some information on that, and Jana just reached out, I think last week, and said that we are moving forward and that we should be receiving funds in September. And so we are getting as many people together. We want to make sure that we get the right people together, ensure it's done right. We're having a kickoff meeting to make sure that everybody's at the table that needs to be at the table, because this is such an important project. We want to do it correctly.
So what's the money going to be used for? I mean, is it to hire a therapist to come into the gym?
It's to build a wing onto our correctional facility.
Yeah, so
it's a behavioral health unit. So right now, because our jail was built in 1998, we don't have a specific unit for anything that we need to maybe deal with mental health issues or suicidal issues or anything like that. We deal with them in a cell right now. We have a couple cells that we have, but this will be a unit that is comprised of MCOT, hopefully. We want to put them in there. It's comprised of mental health resources, nurses, those types of things that we actually have the resources. Right now, we actually have to call on other agencies when we have an inmate that we aren't able to house. And so agencies like Davis County have helped us out. Salt Lake County has helped us out because they actually have these behavioral health units, or they have a medical wing. So we're really excited to be able to do this ourselves and have the ability to take care of these situations ourselves. It's a really important project. And, you know, a lot of people have reached out to me wanting to be, it's kind of a board. They've reached out to me saying that they want to be part of it. I'm so excited that everyone else is excited. I think we have a lot of resources in this community that we can utilize. And I'm just really excited for what's to come.
Yeah. And some of those that come into the jail, right? I mean, are experiencing either. Speaking of construction, the renovation to the sheriff's office almost complete?
Almost complete, and we are also excited for that. We've been in our new building for a while, and this new renovation part is supposed to be finished in a couple weeks. We're crossing our fingers, and we really hope to have an open house for the whole thing. People have been asking to come and see the new building, and I have said, let's wait until we have it all done, because it looks amazing. And the support that we've received from everyone to get this renovation and to have the new building, it was so needed, and we are loving being in the new space. So I'm really excited for everyone else to come see it as well.
Okay. And then let's just end with the frauds and scam. What's the latest that people should look out for?
Well, yeah, we've come full circle here, I guess. it's just, you know, the same thing, right? The frauds, the scams. I think we saw more calls.
Year to date, Leslie, we've had 207 reported scams this year, and at the same time last year we had 140.
Yeah, so definitely an increase. I think one of the really key things here is just how smart these criminals are. And these just keep advancing. You know, it's like every couple of weeks there's something brand new. And, you know, it's kind of funny. Just a few days ago, my dad called me and he was like, "Hey, let me run this by you. Someone just called and said they were from the Salt Lake County Jail and that your brother was arrested, and I need to pay him $2,500 to get him out of jail." And I said, "Well, that definitely sounds wrong. Tell me a little bit more." So as he, you know, talked to me about sort of the, you know, how this call went, I said, no, that's 100% a scam. So the conversations are important. And, you know, if you do feel like something seems a little sketchy, hang up, call the sheriff's office, call, you know, a friend, talk it through. Because 99% of the time, if you feel like it's sketchy and probably a scam, it's a scam.
Yeah. And something I've heard, I thought it was pretty clever too, is say, "I can't talk right now. Let me get your number and I'll call you back."
Totally.
Oh, I like that.
Right. And then it's like, then you can go do your little investigation. But
right,
usually they won't give you a number.
Right. Well, and if, you know, that's a key indicator too. If you mention, "Hey, you know, I'm right in the middle of something, let me give you a call back." And if they dig their heels in and say, "Absolutely not," and they, you know, use those scare tactics to keep you on the phone, huge red flag. Huge red flag.
Okay. Anything else?
Well, I just want to talk about the Summit County Fair. So I'm excited. There's a lot of people that put a lot of work into the Summit County Fair to make this such a great event. Get out and enjoy the fair. I would also like to say that we're doing canine presentations, and we might have a little surprise for the public that we'll be announcing. We have a new member of the sheriff's office on our canine team that will be introduced at the fair. So
yeah,
come out and meet the new member.
We're going to introduce them twice, so 12 o'clock and 4 o'clock.
Yep.
So
on
yeah,
what day?
This will be the 8th, Saturday the 8th. So 12 o'clock and then again at 4 o'clock. Come out. We'll have some Otter Pops. We'll be handing out some popsicles to the family, and showing off our new member.
Yep.
Okay. Casey Bates, Skylar Talbot, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
The Heber City Council meets Tuesday, starting in work session at 5 o'clock. On the phone with a preview of the meeting, I have Heber City Manager Matt Brower. Good morning, Matt.
Leslie, good morning.
Let's see, the council will spend some time discussing and considering an amendment to the Sawmill Phase 4B development agreement. This involves Villa 2 and Regal Homes. So what's being proposed here?
This is a very interesting request. There was a lot within the Sawmill subdivision that was inadvertently sold to two different people. So two different people own the same lot, and they didn't know that. And so they are working to try to come to terms on a deal and hoping the city might be able to partner with them to solve this issue that they've gotten themselves into.
So what are some of the solutions?
They want a couple extra units of density. They want to cut back on the size of a private park that was being proposed in order for all the parties to come out whole in this situation.
How big is the lot?
The lot, if I remember correctly, is about it's about an acre and a half, 2 acres, if I remember correctly.
Okay, so the lots wouldn't be...
No, we're
tiny.
Talking about a small area within the Sawmill development.
All right, so is there a staff recommendation?
We're actually having on our work meeting so we can hear the latest proposal from the two property owners as to what they would hope the city might be able to partner with. We'll listen and see what they've got to say and go from there.
Yeah, I don't know enough about the process, but it seems to me that's kind of crazy that the same lot could be sold twice.
We've had the same thought ourselves. It is quite crazy, but that's apparently what happened.
All right. Let's see. The council will also discuss the Celebration Workforce Housing Project. What decisions does the council need to make here?
This is, again, a work meeting item, so no decision. What they'll be talking about, though, is the master development agreement for phase one of the Celebration Project located on 1200 South. Again, I want to emphasize this is phase one, consists of 148 units, all of them affordable, between 40% and 80% AMI. And it's just walking through the terms of the agreement to see if it's acceptable to the city.
All right. And so how many more phases are to come?
Potentially up to three, but this particular agreement is only for phase one.
All right. And are all 148 being built on the 8.75 acres, or is that for the entire project?
Yeah, so it's on the 8.75 acres. We'll include phase one. Let's see, 148 units. If I remember correctly, 40% of them, excuse me, 10% have to be 40% AMI, 40% have to be 60% or less, and 50% have to be 60% or higher AMI.
All right. What was the council's decision on how to meet the parking obligations here?
That is one of the items that will be discussed at length Tuesday night. The current arrangement of the lot puts them a little bit short of our current ordinance. There's some thoughts about trying to work those issues out in phase two or phase three to see if perhaps if the school district could still maybe acquiesce to participating in some way, because their teachers would certainly benefit by the project. So no decision on that, but the parking will be an issue.
Yeah, and of course, workforce housing continues to be a challenge throughout the Wasatch Back. Any idea how significant the need is in Heber City?
We don't know. However, we are undertaking what's called a needs assessment. We will do that, and that will really identify for us what those needs are, what those affordable housing requirements and needs are throughout Wasatch County. We hope to have that needs assessment done this fall.
Okay, who do you have doing that for you?
I don't remember the company that's doing it, but we are doing it in conjunction with Jason Glidden and Mountainlands Housing. And so we got a lot of smart people on it, and I think it'll be a great project.
All right. So what kind of role is the city playing in encouraging more attainable housing? I know that you have, like, loaned on impact fees. What else are you doing?
Well, Celebration Housing, I think, is our first soiree, really, into bringing about a truly affordable housing project. We're deferring about $3.1, $3.2 million of impact fees. Deferring that, meaning that they'll be paid back to the city in 9 to 12 years at a 4% interest. But that's the first time the city's done anything like that. We've also negotiated into nearly all of our master development agreements located in the North Village affordable housing requirements. For example, Jordanelle Ridge has got to build, I think, 561 units at 80% AMI, for example. And so we've got a number of things in play, and Celebration is really the first one that we think will be realized.
All right, and has the city heard from any nearby neighbors, any concerns about the project?
So Celebration is on 12th South, which is primarily a commercial highway, primarily, because you've got the hospital across the street, you got the high school behind it, you've got say auto body shop, you know, to the west. And so not a lot of residents live adjacent to it, and its zoning probably is right in terms of its use.
Yeah. All right. Let's see, during the regular meeting, an update from UDOT on the Heber Valley Corridor Environmental Impact Statement. Again, no staff report here. Do you have any idea what the news is?
We're looking forward to getting an update from the project manager, Craig Hancock, out of Region 3 UDOT. It's been a good month or so since they last reported, and so looking to see what updates they may give us Tuesday night.
All right. Again, because we're hoping to have a final plan by the end of the year, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Also, an update on the Heber City Cemetery Master Plan. Do you need some direction from council with this?
Actually, no. What we're doing is updating the plan to recognize many of the decisions that council's already made that impact the cemetery. For example, we just completed recently a columbarium project. We just constructed Harry's Farms Parkway through the northern side of it. So this update is really reflecting a lot of decisions that council's already made that impact the cemetery.
All right. Is additional cemetery space anticipated as Heber City continues to grow?
No, but our cemetery, based on its previous master plan, has well over 100 years of capacity available. And I believe that should only increase as we're starting to transition into what we call niches, which is for cremations. The market's really bending that way hard now. So I think that projection will hold.
All right. So do the master plan include improvements beyond... I guess what would those include? Because we're not expanding capacity here.
Yeah, so the master plan is really planning the other half of the cemetery that's been undeveloped. It's incorporating the improvements to the roadway, the columbarium that were already recently built. It's incorporating some family estate areas. So it should retain the same capacity, plots and niches that will last us 100 or so years.
Right. All right. Also, an ordinance amendment on those who disobey parking regulation. What's prompting this proposed change?
I don't believe the city has updated its parking ordinance in years. In fact, the minimum fee for a parking violation is $25. This ordinance would increase it from $25 to $50 and change the violation from a Class C misdemeanor to an infraction, which is more in line with best practices.
Okay. Do you have a problem with people disobeying parking regulations?
From time to time, we do. It really impacts us during the winter, during the snowplow season. When we get a lot of snow on the road, the snowplows are trying to go by, and you have cars parked in the roadway. That's really when we have the bulk of our issues.
All right. The council will also consider an engineering services agreement with the firm Ardura to serve as the airport engineer of record. Why is this agreement important?
So the FAA requires us to have not only an engineer record, but a planning firm of record. And recently approached us and said we need to put an RFP out and redo the engineer of record because we have over $100 million of capital projects planned for the airport. And they want to make sure that we update the RFP process before implementing the design on those projects. And so we've gone through the RFP process. We selected Ardura, who, by the way, is also the existing airport engineer of record. And so this is really a housekeeping item that the FAA has required us to do.
Well, I don't recall hearing that $100 million figure of improvements. Where's all that money coming from?
95%, 90 to 95% will be coming from the FAA and UDOT. Our airport will be required to fund about 5% of that, which is about $4 to $4.5 million.
All right. And do we have a timeline then on these improvements?
The master plan indicated that they would likely be done within 15 or so years. We have had some conversations with the FAA who've indicated they would hope that they might be done before the 2034 Olympics.
All right. How does that airport fit into Heber City's long-term economic and transportation plans?
Well, the airport is a general aviation airport. It is not a passenger airport. The airport has many uses that benefit our public, such as wildfighting. It is used a lot with the Forest Service, BLM, to fight wildfires. It is used by the fishing game to stock fish, load the fish up, and to carry them out. It's also used, of course, for air traffic, part of the national air traffic system. And of course, we have several businesses out there. We have OK3, which is an FBO. We have several SASOs, which are smaller businesses. And we have rental car companies. So it does contribute to our economy, and it does provide an asset.
Okay. Anything else, Matt, you wanted to mention?
Maybe two things. We have our Truth and Taxation public hearing on Wednesday at 7 o'clock. And of course, I also want to invite your guests, your listeners to our Heber Market on Main every Thursday afternoon through August 20th.
Okay. Matt Brower is the city manager of Heber City. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
The second annual Park City Jewish Festival happening this Wednesday, August 5th, 6 p.m. at the Canyons Village Lawn. In the studio with details, I have Yudi Steigler, director of Chabad Park City. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so first tell us what Chabad Park City is.
Chabad Park City is a Jewish outreach organization with more than 3,000 centers all around the world. And we've been in Park City this August, so it will be 14 years. And we've been hosting these kinds of events, like the Park City Jewish Festival. But Chabad is really there for anything 24/7, anything that anyone may need, anything related to Judaism, emotional support, any other support, physical support, whatever it may be. People know they have a number to call 24/7 for anything. Any emergencies, anything that comes, we're here for them.
All right. So it's not a place where you practice with your religion.
It is also that. It's everything. It's anything related to Judaism, whatever it may be.
All right. Is there a different form of Judaism, or you welcome all?
We welcome all. Anyone, all backgrounds, anyone is welcome. And we also, there's no membership, so that everyone actually does feel welcome at any time. People can walk in, people can reach out, people can come for a hot meal, or if they just need a place to hang out, and that's really what it is, so that people really feel welcome, and that they don't feel they have to actually be part of, you know, if they're more practicing or less practicing. It's, you know, we believe we're all part of one big body, and together we complete each other.
So people walk in where, and when can they do that?
So the Chabad Center here is in the Canyons Village. We're actually located from in the Silverado Lodge. And that's where we have our center.
All right. So is there a schedule online or something that people could find out more?
Yeah, people can find out more at JewishParkCity.com. People are also welcome to reach out directly to me at Rabbi, R-A-B-B-I, at JewishParkCity.com.
Okay, so you are a rabbi.
Yes.
Oh, all right. As I mentioned, this is the second annual Park City Jewish Festival. What inspired you to create the event? What's the purpose of it?
The Park City Jewish Festival is really a celebration of Jewish life, culture, and community. And I think of it as an experience where people could come together and feel the warmth, the joy of the Jewish traditions through incredible live music, delicious kosher food, family activities, and a welcoming atmosphere. And whether one is Jewish or not, you have Jewish friends, you have Jewish neighbors, or you're just simply curious, this festival is for you.
All right, so what could people expect when they get there?
Well, there will be people can come connect through delicious food. And we will have great entertainment. We will have, we're bringing world-class entertainment with 8 Day. That's a Jewish band out of Los Angeles, as well as Nissen Black. And one of my favorite things as a rabbi is introducing people of all different traditions, people of different backgrounds, and to come and experience Jewish life in a positive and authentic way. And we believe that the best way to do that is, you know, sharing a meal together, music. The power of music is very powerful. The power of a tune, the power of a song, and when you come to the festival, you're able to, you know, you have a falafel, you meet a person, you meet a neighbor, somebody you've never met before, and then all the stereotypes disappear. And that's how friendships begin. So when you come to the festival, you'll experience some phenomenal Jewish artists, and they have performed on stages all around the world. And what is exciting with the music, I think, is that it's rooted in Jewish tradition, and their music is very uplifting and also universal. But you don't have to be Jewish. You don't have to understand Hebrew or Yiddish to enjoy the music. It's just simply good music that really speaks every language. So if we go back to just a moment to Nissen, one of the performers we're bringing this year is Nissen Black, and he has a really truly remarkable story. Grew up in Seattle, not Jewish, surrounded by a lot of challenges, and Nissen discovered his Judaism as an adult through a personal spiritual journey. Today he actually lives in Israel and has become an internationally recognized rapper, which is not a typical Jewish music. And but the messages are very much aligned with Judaism. It's about hope, faith, resilience, and purpose. And I think he's Nissen is a proof that our backgrounds don't have to define our futures.
All right. So you mentioned two musical acts, one starting at 5, the other...
So it starts at 6.
Okay.
We have 8th Day also. 8th Day, they were here last year also at the festival, the first festival, and their message is truly uplifting and the energy is great, the music is great, and right after the event, everyone was like, okay, when are we bringing A-Day again? So we listened to the community, we listened and to what the people actually want, and we're bringing 8th Day again. 8th Day is a, as I said, their music is upbeat. It's just great music. They're also Disney featured artist, and it's a great way to come and get together through their beautiful music.
All right, so the event goes from 6 to when?
To about 8:30 or so.
Okay. All right, so yeah. They'll each have about an hour to
Of music. We have a third performer also. His name is Chaim Zippel. He actually grew up in Israel. He's from Israel, still lives in Israel, but the Israeli version of Israel Got Talent. He was one of the winners, and he as a little child, he had the power to unite people from different backgrounds, different faith in Israel, and we're bringing that voice right here in our backyard.
Awesome. So is there a cost to this?
There's no cost. It's free, but we'd still appreciate people to reserve for sure for security reasons. If they could just go online, take some minute, parkcityjewishfestival.com, and they could register online.
Okay. Were you surprised by the turnout and the diversity of those who attended at last year's festival?
Very, very, very much so. We never expected anything like that. It was just kind of a dream, because we know Park City does a great job with celebrating the different backgrounds, different faiths, different cultures. And we're like, you know, there's a nice Park City Jewish community, and let's do something similar. Let's bring it to Park City. But we never expected. And it has become one of the largest Jewish events in the history of the state of Utah, and so we knew right after the event we have to start thinking about next year's festival, and here we are just 2 days out.
Yeah, certainly given the rise in anti-Semitism around the world, how important is it to hold this, you know, joyful, uplifting public celebration of the Jewish culture?
Well, we always believe the best way, the best answer is adding more light. The best answer to anti-Semitism is more pro-Semitism. Just come out there and celebrate. And there's just so much beauty in Judaism to celebrate. And unfortunately, a lot of Jewish people today, they identify by the anti-Semitism. They feel Jewish because there's the hatred out there. They're targeted by somebody else. And we're like, no, that's not why you have to be Jewish. You're not Jewish because someone out there is targeting you and they think that you're bad, or you're Jewish. There's so much beauty about being Jewish. Forget about them. We have security, and just celebrate with peace of mind. Be there, be in the moment, and just experience pro-Semitism. Experience the beauty of Judaism.
Well, it sounds like you've taken some steps though to help ensure that the festival is safe and welcoming for everyone.
Absolutely. So we're partnering with the amazing Summit County Sheriff's Office, which they're also there every Saturday at our services, and they'll be there. They'll have the SWAT team and overhead team, and we're not leaving anything out. We want to make sure that we take every precaution possible, and so that everyone is able to come and, like I said, celebrate with peace of mind, not have to think about who's behind me, what's next to me, and you know, is it a threat? Unfortunately, we're at a stage where people feel like that when they're out celebrating a Jewish event, and so that's what we're here for, and we're very, very grateful to the Summit County Sheriff's Office for that.
Yeah, and what was your reaction to that Cornell University student who says that he doesn't want to work with Jews because most of the Jews he's met he doesn't like?
Well, I mean, what does it mean, most of the Jews that he's met he's never liked? I mean, I've met many Jewish people in my life. As a rabbi, a Jew is someone who is, you know, it's just a person that's out there. We've been a light unto the nations right from the moment that we were at Sinai. We were at over 3,300 years ago. Our mission is to make the world a better place, to bring light to the world. And I think the Jewish community has contributed so much in this country since its founding. We've contributed in almost in every industry. If you look at the We're such a small percentage of world population, of the population even of the United States, but the contributions have been so greater. We've literally in every industry, whether it's medical, it's arts, it's anything, science, whatever you can only think of, we've contributed so much. And it's unfortunate, the hatred that we see today that's happening around there, and it's a little something, it doesn't make a difference what it is. People right away will jump onto the anti-Semitism wagon and just take it. It doesn't make it, whatever story, if there's a headline, now you have with the immigration from Morocco to Spain, and right away, yes, it's the Jews. Why not? Let's blame the Jews for whatever it is. The Jews are bad. The Jews are that. It's unfortunate that we're back at there. I grew up in Belgium, and all of my grandparents are Holocaust survivors, and never imagined that we would come to a stage where we see that anti-Semitism and that hatred against towards the Jewish people. And it's all around. It's on social media. It's in the news. It's like a wildfire. And it just spreads, just like that. And it's unfortunate, but I think a good answer to that is to come to the festival, meet Jewish people. You'll actually meet Jewish people where you see you have so much more in common that you can imagine, that you can think of, and we're all trying to have a good life, and we're all trying to make the world a better place, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, so... I haven't now. It's a Chabad, right?
Yeah.
Is there something that is like that? Because it sounds like it's a worldwide movement. Or
Chabad is absolutely worldwide. It was I have a brother-in-law. His Chabad in Thailand, and interesting enough, today in Thailand, so many visitors. They have one of the largest Shabbat dinners and holiday celebrations. Just this past Shabbat, they had over 600 people for Shabbat dinner in Chiang Mai, Thailand. But it's the Rebbe's message, the Rebbe, Rabbi Schneerson of blessed memory, who accepted the leadership of Chabad in 1950. And he had this idea after the Holocaust when we were targeted for being Jewish, and he said if Hitler had so much hatred for every single Jew, and he wanted to kill every single Jew no matter where, he's like, let's hunt every last Jew, and he had a map, and he looked, there's one Jew, and on his map he would have, there's two Jews living in this little village. He wouldn't give up on any Jew. And so the Rebbe's message in 1950 was, that's how we have to hunt every single Jew with love. If there is a Jew somewhere in this little town, and 14 years ago Park City was not the same that it is today, but if there's one Jew in one town, then we have to be out there. And if there's 1,000 Jews, let's say in Park City, and we've reached 999 Jews, we still have not fulfilled our mission, because there's one Jew out there who Hitler would have been out behind after that person to kill that person, to be after them. And so we have to be after that with love and kindness. And with that, I just want to quickly mention also, we have two roving rabbis, who are rabbi students who are in town right now, and that's their job. They're here for a couple of weeks in the summer. Just go out to different families, and if anyone would appreciate a visit, whether it's putting up a mezuzah, which is a protection for the home, or they would just appreciate a visit of a rabbi or a fresh-made challah, they're happy. They're welcome to reach out to me. Again, my email is rabbi@jewishparkcity.com.
Okay. Again, the second annual Park City Jewish Festival happening this Wednesday, August 5th, 6 p.m. there at the Canyons Village Lawn. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Again, Rabbi Udi Steiger.